Those of you that were following the messages and the scriptures on the card, but notice that we switched gears tonight. I'm not sure why that had to be, but as I guess a lot of you know, or assume, these are not all new messages that we preach as we come to series of meetings like this. And the one there that I wanted to preach tonight was a message that I was trying to put together, and as hard as I tried, I could not get it together. So maybe another time, maybe God has reasons that we don't know about. We want to try to bring a message from His Word, from this great chapter of Luke 14. We want to concentrate mostly on the portion that Brother Harry read this evening, from verses 15 to the end. But just to get a setting as to what's going on there in Luke 14, Jesus is in the home of a chief Pharisee, verse 1 tells us, on a Sabbath day, and he's there to eat bread, to have a meal, and the last phrase of that verse says, they watched him. That gives me the idea that they were trying to find fault with him. And there was, at that same meal, a certain man, verse 2 says, which had the dropsy. He had some kind of physical affliction. I didn't really research exactly what it was, but they knew Jesus had a tendency to help people that needed help, and that he didn't pay too much attention to their interpretation of how the Sabbath day should be kept. It was a bone they liked to continually pick with him, and they were looking for another chance to do so. I have an idea. Well, he went ahead and took care of the man who needed his help. And he pointed out their hypocrisy by exposing how they had more regard for their cattle. They cared more about their cattle, their livestock, than they did for men like this man. They would like to have been known as people that loved God so much and loved others. But he's saying, you're hypocrites. It's not the case. And then, in verse 7, Jesus told them a parable, or it says he's getting ready to tell them a parable, as he marked how they didn't have assigned seats, apparently, and they jockeyed, you know, as the conversation before meal, they kind of shuffled their way over. They wanted to get, you know, close to the front, close to the host. They wanted to be in a place of prominence. They wanted to be where they could be recognized. And Jesus told them a story and said, look, that's not a very wise thing to do. You're going to get up there sometime, and somebody of more importance is going to come than you. You're going to get asked to move down. You're going to have to take the last place because everybody else has moved up as far as they could. You're going to have to go to the end. And you'd be wise to seek the low place. If a higher place is for you, you'll get invited up there. You humble yourself. You'll be exalted. But if you exalt yourself, mark my word, you will be humbled. It's the same thing that he told us in the parable that we looked at the other night on prayer. It's a theme that he goes over repeatedly, apparently, through his ministry, that we need to maintain a spirit of humility. And then he rebuked them for their tendency to just pretend they were real hospitable by just inviting one another back and forth, expecting, as they treated others with lavish hospitality, that the gifts would come back to them. There certainly is a time and place to get together with friends and visit back and forth. I don't believe Jesus was teaching against that. But what he did say is, look, if you want to practice real hospitality, you go out and find those who cannot pay you back, who don't have the means. You show them love, and then you'll be blessed and recompensed in the resurrection of the just. And as he ends that sentence, one of them who was at the meal with him, verse 15 says, heard these words and said, blessed is he that shall eat bread in the kingdom of God. Now, I'm not exactly sure what he meant by that, but this is what I take from it. I take from it, he's saying, you know, ain't we the lucky ones? We're going to get to eat at the biggest supper of them all. He said, blessed are they that will eat bread in the kingdom of God. Well, I'm not exactly sure that's what Jesus meant. He told a parable to explain it or to teach some more. Now, at our home, I like it when we eat together. We don't always do it. Sometimes schedules pull us apart and somebody's late and somebody needs to go and things like that. But as much as we can, I like when we eat together. My theory is we're not running Miller's Diner at the edge of East Berlin, where people come and go as they please. We're a family. And mealtime is for more than for filling up. Mealtime is a time to share and communicate and to fellowship. And mealtime is more than for eating. So we try to eat together. Now, in Jesus' day, when a great feast or a banquet was to be held, whether it be for marriage or some other celebration event, the custom was that those who were to be invited would get told ahead of time, we're going to have a banquet on Saturday the 22nd or whatever it was. And that'd be great. They knew it was an evening meal. They didn't have cell phones with the time on them. They didn't have watches. They didn't have clocks in their cars. They didn't have several timepieces in the house. They didn't walk like we work. They didn't, you know, arrive just 2 minutes before it was the start. They knew it was to be that evening. They would be doing their thing. And when the time came, a servant would come around and say, now's the time. Come, all things are now ready. And they would have been looking for that and waiting for that, and they would got that message. And so that's the understanding that the people would have had as Jesus told the parable here in the next several verses. In this parable that Jesus told, he told the story of some individuals who had been invited to one of these suppers. But when the last messenger came around, on the day of the supper, and said, hey, look, now come, everything is ready. They started to make excuse. Every one of them did. First one said, I bought a piece of land and I'm going to look at it. Well, he knew that when he accepted the invitation the first time. The other one said, I bought 5 yoke of oxen and I'm on my way to try them out. And the third one said, well, I got married. I can't come now. And as often as we read these things, sometimes we miss something, and I've gone over this, but it stood out to me as Brother Harry read it tonight, that the Lord, the master of the house, when he heard these things, he was angry. He had gone to a lot of work. He had paid a great price. He had invited those who he wanted to come. And now here it was, they were refusing to come. The supper was still served, but those who ate came from the streets and the lanes of the city and the highways and the hedges of the countryside. Now, as I mentioned the other night, Jesus told some parables on prayer, and he told us, in one case, you remember why he told the parable? And the next case, he told us exactly whose benefit it was for. And here, we're not told those details, so we're going to try to sort it out for ourselves. This is the best I can do. Maybe someone has something to share with me afterwards. I'd be very welcome to hear that. But supper and eating, as I've already indicated, is for much more than for filling up. It signifies fellowship and conversation and friendship. And sharing. Mealtime is for being together. And Jesus described himself at other times as actually the menu. He said, I am the bread of life. I'm the bread that came down from heaven. And so I take that if we're to be followers of Christ, we're to get together. We're to come together in times of fellowship, in times of communion, in times of eating. The Christian life is not to be lived in isolation. Some people say, well, I'm a Christian, but I worship, you know, in the woods on Sunday or whatever. We're to get together with God's people. We're not lone rangers in the Christian life. We're to be in fellowship with other believers and function as a body. We are to be united. We need each other to bounce us out and to help us, to be accountable and to encourage us and to strengthen us and to guide us. God works through other Christians. To do that, of course, we need to be in fellowship with the head. If we're in fellowship with the head, we'll be in fellowship with each other. In other words, we need, as we go through our Christian life, to be, quote, eating together. We need to be spending time together. We need to be fellowshipping and worshiping and growing together. Another way that Jesus described, not Jesus necessarily, but the church is described in the New Testament, is as the bride of Christ. You know, one day there's going to be a honeymoon, and it's going to start with a great supper. We're told in Revelation 19 about the marriage supper of the Lamb. And so here now, we've been given the invitation. We have food to eat. We have great spiritual things to partake of and fellowship over. And we anticipate sometime soon a huge supper. The marriage supper in heaven, we have that to look forward to. Anyhow, we turn back to this parable. We notice that in this situation, many were invited. Verse 16 says that this certain man made a great supper and bade many. Now, to the supper that Jesus offers, never was a bigger multitude invited, because all people of all time, not just even those who are on earth now, but all people are invited to the supper. And so the first duty of disciples, you want a title, I didn't tell you, if you want a title for tonight, we call it Duties of Disciples. The first duty of a disciple that we see in this passage is don't miss supper. I mean, if you miss supper, you've missed it all. There is no reason to miss supper. This is what we say at home sometimes. So-and-so is not here. Supper time. Why not? There needs to be a reason. You don't just skip meals at home without a reason. At least that's the way I like it. There's no reason to miss this greatest supper of them all. Because whosoever will may come and take of the water and the bread and the milk and the meat and the honey, as much as they can take, as much as they can hold. It's all there. All that our souls desire and need is provided in abundance. But alas, many will not come. Many make excuses. Many say, it doesn't suit me now. I'll come when I'm ready. Doesn't work that way. Others will make a lame excuse someday and say, well, I didn't think it was for me. But they'll know that's not true, because whosoever will may come. Some will say, well, my grandpa was a preacher, or my daddy was a deacon. I thought I was close enough. But that won't work. There are an infinite number of excuses, but no reasons for missing supper. Somewhere I read that the most important vitamin for Christians is B1. I don't know if there is a B1 vitamin, but the most important duty, if you're going to be a disciple, is B1. Because you're not going to get to the rest if you don't make this first step. If you don't make this decision and make this choice. You see, we are not born disciples. We are born in sin. There's a great advantage in life if we're born to disciples. There's great blessing if we live around disciples. It's a good thing to have disciples as friends. But the most important thing is you be one. Don't make excuses. The feast is ready. You're invited. Come. This feast was held, as we already said, even though the ones invited didn't come. God's not in a panic about the marriage supper of the Lamb. If we are so unfortunate to miss it, if we find it our lot to wake up in hell instead of heaven, we will realize that all the reasons we gave were really just excuses. We could have been at the supper. Don't make excuses. The first duty, if we're going to be a disciple of Jesus Christ, is be one. Don't miss supper. Second thing we notice here is that being a disciple is not just going to suppers and having plenty to eat and having a good time. Life is not just a bowl of cherries and a bed of roses. Jesus made it plain in these next verses here that being a disciple of Him is a costly thing. In these verses, He's no longer in the Pharisee's house there at meat. He's traveling somewhere, and at this time there are great crowds following Him. He was very popular at this time. You know, people like to see miracles. People like to be healed and like to receive free food. Many of them would have been glad and would have followed Him quickly if He would have suggested that now's the time to overthrow the Romans and follow Me, we'll do it. They'd have been right with Him. But as Jesus would make it plain later, though He was a king, His kingdom was not a kingdom of this world. He is the great physician, but He did miracles of healing, not because He was on a campaign to wipe out human suffering, but to demonstrate that He had the power to heal the whole person, inside and outside. He had that power. He had that authority. He could supernaturally feed thousands. He could do that. But it was not so that they would no longer have to work for food, but to substantiate His claim that He had authority from above and that He was indeed the bread of life, the bread that came down from heaven. Now, the invitation to supper is freely given. But Jesus would have us understand that being a disciple of His does come at a cost. It requires sacrifice. We see that in verses 25 to 27. In his writing to Timothy, Paul encourages Timothy to be ready to endure hardness or evil as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. Jesus says to be a disciple of him requires that he be given first place in our lives. Nothing there come between, not even the normal closeness a child feels for his parents, or a man for his wife, or for his children, or for siblings. None of these are to come ahead of the loyalty and faithfulness that we owe to Jesus. We are to be willing to give up even our own life, suffering whatever may come as a result of our walk and fellowship with Christ. If we're made fun of a little bit, if we pay with losing a job, or as so many are even now, with their own life blood, we are to remain faithful to him. Being a disciple of Jesus is a sacrifice. Since being a disciple of Jesus requires sacrifice, Jesus says, you really shouldn't miss supper, but don't take it lightly. Count the cost. There's a cost for being a disciple. And we see this especially in verses 28 to 33. In these verses, Jesus uses the examples of a man who builds a tower and also of a king going to war. Towers were commonly used by those who had vineyards so that they could get up in them and observe what was going on, to defend against those who may want to rob or against wild animals who would come to mess up the vineyard or whatever piece of property they had. And Jesus asked his listeners to imagine the ridicule a farmer would face if he started to build a tower and wasn't able to finish. He ran out of money and couldn't get it done. The second example is of a king who learns that another king is coming against him. Probably these were kings of small, maybe just a city. One was coming with 20,000, and this king only had 10,000 to defend his city, and he would have to decide, shall I try to take him on? Shall I try to defend the city? Or is the cost too high? Should I try to negotiate a peace treaty? These were the examples that Jesus gave. Now, three times in these verses, Jesus uses the phrase, he cannot be my disciple. In other words, if we aren't willing to pay the price and make the sacrifice, then we cannot be his disciple. The last time there is in verse 33, whosoever he be of you that forsaketh not all that he hath, he cannot be my disciple. That's pretty stiff stuff. But I suggest we water it down to our peril. The last two verses of this chapter tell us that what it's like to try to be a disciple of Jesus without really surrendering to him, without letting him be the Lord. They say salt is good, but if the salt have lost his savor, wherewith shall it be seasoned? It is neither fit for the land, nor yet for the dunghill, but men cast it out. He that hath ears to hear, let him hear. The first thing we need to do is come to supper. Be a disciple. Make that choice, recognizing that it will come with a cost, and then purpose to live by God's grace a salty life. A life that makes a difference, not just go along for the ride. There are some who teach that that's the way it works. You can sign up to be a Christian. But then sometime later, you may or may not allow Jesus to be Lord of your life. Jesus calls us to different walks. There's no doubt about that. He doesn't call us all to endure the same things or to walk the same path. But I never see him giving two sets of instructions to his followers. It's always, you follow me. If we sign up, Jesus, I'd really like to get to heaven. You know, I don't like that all other alternative too much. I'd like to just kind of do what I want to do, you know, in the meantime. And if you'll just get me in at the end, that's really all I need. I don't think that's the way it works. When we come to Christ, the Bible makes it clear, from that point on, we are not our own. We have been bought with a price. We have a responsibility to honor Christ with our body and our spirit, our whole life. It all belongs to Him. From what we hear Him say in these verses, He expects His followers to be devoted to Him wholeheartedly, to deny themselves completely, to be totally loyal to Him. Now, if you're a vine dresser and you're trying to decide whether this is a good year to build a tower, you know you need one and you'd like to have one, you can calculate. And you might be able to say, just can't afford it this year. Maybe next year. Might be too bad. The thieves might come this year. The wild animals might attack your property this year. But you can decide that. But if you're a king of a city, you have 10,000 men to defend your city, and another king is coming against you with 20,000, you got to decide. You got to decide now. You can't say, well, we'll fight him next year. No, he's coming. He's coming soon. You must decide. All of us have an enemy that is coming. The Bible tells us that the last enemy that we will face here on this earth is death. That's true even of believers. Death is an enemy. And you know what? He's coming for us all. He'll get us all. None of us will be exempt, and none of us knows when He will come. Sooner or later, the grim reaper will come. We must decide what we're going to do. We must decide if we're going to be followers of Christ or if we're going to chance it, we're going to go our own. I urge you, don't miss supper. Be one. Step out for Christ tonight. We're going to do, as we've done before, sing a hymn of meditation. You sense God's call on your life. Don't put it off.